Hey, beautiful people, you're listening to The Hue Report, a show that celebrates Black beauty 24/7, 365. I'm your host, Olivia Hancock, and during each episode, I chat with incredible Black beauty entrepreneurs, editors, and executives about their career journeys, unique experiences with beauty, and the products that work for them. So welcome to another episode of The Hue Report. Today, I'm joined by Christina, who is the founder of 54 Thrones. I'm so excited we're in person for this. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show.
I am happy to be here. We got up here this morning from Houston, but I had to come see you.
Yes, I so appreciate it. And before we talk about all the amazing things you have going on with 54 Thrones, I want to talk about the fact that we're 9 days into the new year, 2023. How was 2022 for you, like personally, professionally, with the brand, everything?
Every year since 2020 has just gotten better and better and better for the brand. Mm-hmm. So 2022 was definitely one of those years also. I'm super excited for 2023. Yes. I learned a lot 2022. We grew. Mm-hmm. We gained more like loyal and supportive followers. Yeah. And customers and supporters. So 2022, I have no complaints.
I love it. Are you the type of person that makes resolutions, or like, are you just like, I'm going with the flow in the new year, whatever comes, comes?
You know, I used to make resolutions and I would write them down, you know, at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And I would forget them like 3 months in. And then, so what I do now is just, I have like general things mm-hmm. that I know I want to achieve, or and I just kind of like indoctrinate those into my mind.
Yeah.
I am a list person.
Me too.
I am. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to resolutions, no. I'm more so like, okay, these are the things that I want to hit on this year. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of like check in with myself every like quarter to yeah. see where I am with those things.
I'm the same way too, because I feel like resolutions are a lot of pressure. Like, it's just like, oh man, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z by this date, and then you don't do it and you're like,
more yeah, pressure like, on yourself. Yeah.
So I have broken it down like work, personal, life. Like, so I feel like that's a way more approachable, like accessible yeah. way to like plan out your year.
I prefer it that way.
Definitely. So you mentioned the reason that you're in New York is because 54 Thrones is in Sephora yes. now, which is amazing, incredible, so deserving. And I feel like Sephora has played a big role in your journey. But for you going into these stores, how has it felt like seeing your product on the shelf of like such a big retailer?
I have waited for this moment to see 54 Thrones on the shelves for so long. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we went to some stores in Houston mm-hmm. and we came today to New York, and to literally like see 54 Thrones African Beauty Butter, like yes. to see it there. I'm like, people say the word surreal, but it really feels surreal. Like yeah. this is in Sephora stores. People know the brand and yeah. can walk in there and just get it and go back to work or go home. And, you know, so mm-hmm. it's an incredible feeling. Like, and then to also have like my team here with me
yeah.
who, you know, we've all been working on this for so long and put so much into it. Mm-hmm. So it is incredible. Like, I'm so excited. I'm so just looking forward to what's to come for us.
I'm so excited for you because, you know, I keep a butter. There's a butter in my bag right now. I always keep them with me. My mom has them. So I've loved seeing the brand just grow over the last few years. And like, the Sephora moment has been years in the making. It's not just an overnight thing that's happened. Right. So I want to take it back to the beginning before 54 Thrones. Like, what led to this? Because you've mentioned, like, the reason for this brand is because of your upbringing, your cultural roots. So talk a little bit about that, how your upbringing like paved the way for the brand to be here.
Absolutely. So my father is Nigerian, my mother is American. So mm-hmm. I grew up in a Nigerian American like blended household, mm-hmm. but I grew up in the suburbs of Austin, Texas. So far away from my dad's family in Nigeria. Yeah. And I didn't travel to Nigeria until 2012. And so practically my whole up to like my, you know, late 20s, I had never been to Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And I just grew up kind of like a regular suburban kid's, you know, childhood.
Yeah.
And I remember being a kid and just wanting to like blend in. I was different,
yeah.
but I didn't want to feel different. My name was different. Mm-hmm. You know, I ate different when I got home and I wanted to like blend in. So I remember at some points I felt embarrassed mm-hmm. to be different or to be Nigerian and to have, you know, these different, you know, traditions and things yeah. like that. And one thing that I do remember that I did appreciate as a kid, though, was that my dad's sister, she lives in Nigeria mm-hmm. and she would always find people who were traveling to the States to give little tubs of shea butter to.
Yeah.
And they would bring those tubs to my house and we would use them. And I didn't realize until I got much older, but that was the way she wanted to make sure that we grew up with parts of our culture. Mm-hmm. And so when I was a kid, I was just like, why does our lotion come from Africa? You know, I didn't understand it. But when I got older, you know, and I spoke to her more, I realized that. And so when I decided to quit my job in corporate consulting, I didn't quit and be like, I'm going to go start 54 Thrones.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I just had this feeling that I needed to learn more about who I was and where I came from. Mm-hmm. And so I literally quit my job, cashed out all my like retirement, and I booked a flight to Nigeria. And I have been traveling to Africa for the past 10 years. Mm. When I went, I felt so much at home.
Yeah.
I felt like this was where I needed to be. Mm-hmm. My skin looked better. I felt better. I was eating better. Like my body for everything, mm-hmm. like being in Africa and being around so many amazing, beautiful Black people. That was like a very spiritual experience for me because, you know, I grew up, you know, in the 90s and we did have like some Black teachers and, you know, bankers and things like that. But to go to a place where like the president is Black, mm-hmm. and it has been Black for decades and it's a normal thing. That was like an awakening to me. And at that point in time, I was traveling back and forth to so many different countries in Africa. And every place that I went to, I was drawn to the women who were like making shea butter, mm-hmm. and argan oil. And I remember this was back before Instagram was like the thing. I would get on Facebook and I would be taking pictures and videos and I would be like, guys, you know, I was showing people this and they mm-hmm. were so amazed. And I was like, well, if anyone's interested in shea butter, I'm going to bring some back. Yeah. And that was how I was like testing the market. Mm-hmm. And so many people were interested because they saw that I was going directly to the source. And I was partnering with these women who, you know, worked on shea butter cooperatives. And so I did that for about a year. I would go and bring suitcases and fill them up and then bring them back to the States and mm-hmm. then mix stuff and blend it and sell it. And then I said, you know what? I want to start a brand. I want to work with these women and men that I had met. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do that also to show like beautiful things come from Africa.
Yeah.
Because back, this was like in 2014, 2015, it wasn't, you know, Ghana and everybody's going to Ghana yeah. and doing all this now. It wasn't like that. Like people didn't really, not many people were aware of how beautiful and what the continent had to offer. And so I wanted to start this brand to show that, to show mm-hmm. it through the people that we work with, through the beauty secrets, you know, through the different countries. And so that's how it got born.
Yeah.
That's how 54 Thrones was born.
I love that. And so you talked about like the evolution of how the idea came to be, but when it came to formalizing this business idea, because you're new to beauty entrepreneurship, what was that journey like for you?
I knew nothing. Like all I knew about the beauty industry was what it was missing and mm-hmm. what I wanted to bring to it. I knew yeah. nothing else about the beauty industry in that aspect. Mm-hmm. But my mother's side of the family, there were 16 of them. My mother is number 12. Mm-hmm. And so she had 8 sisters and they all were just these glamorous, beautiful, bold, like Black women, yeah. like just beautiful women. And they, like one of my aunts, she had leopard carpet in her whole house, like
super glam,
just super glam, everything, yeah. the perfumes, the furs, the silk. So I grew up like with these beautiful women always around. Another one of my aunts was a Janet Jackson impersonator. Oh, so she would travel the world being Janet Jackson.
Yeah.
So I had like these and they always were done, mm-hmm. hair done. All of them were cosmetologists too, hair done, makeup done, the latest fashions, everything. And yeah. so I grew up around beauty. Yeah. My mother sold Mary Kay, like they all were like in this beauty world. So I grew up like just engulfed in beauty, mm-hmm. but I didn't know anything about the business.
Yeah.
And so when I started, I was very naive. I was very, very naive. And now that I look back on it, I'm glad I was, because when you're naive, you don't understand the concept that you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you can and can't do. So you just try stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for that, because I was naive enough to think that I could travel to Africa with my suitcase and start a business and people we'd be where we are today. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I did that, because that it was hard, but that also helped for my story. It showed that transparency was important to us.
Yeah.
It showed that, you know, it showed the actual people who were making our ingredients mm-hmm. and how we were working with them. So, and it showed me traveling, showing how beautiful Africa was. And so all of those little pieces were these like jewels and part of our foundation that really helped people buy into the brand and buy into it, to its authenticity.
Yeah.
So that, and I've just been learning as I'm going. I have some amazing mentors, you know, and founder friends, but I mean, there wasn't like a course for how to start a beauty brand, you know, when I started. And there's probably still not one, but I had to learn as I went.
I love that. And so, you know, you mentioned authenticity, transparency are like core pillars of the brand, and especially that relates to like the people that you work with in Africa and giving these women like empowerment and helping them support themselves. So can you talk a little bit about that and how you work with them to bring like the butter to life and all the other products?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I started, you know, in 2015, I wasn't like, I'm going to start this big brand, mm-hmm. but I was like, okay, you guys are making shea butter. I see you making it with my hands. Mm-hmm. I see the people that are making it.
Yeah.
It's real.
Mm-hmm.
This is not watered down. It's not mixed with, it's real. I'm here. I'm in Africa. I see it. And initially it's like, I think a lot of people, they go into different places of the world and they want to help. Like in their mind, it's like, you want to help. But I think it's also important that you can really identify what is help and how can you do something positive and still sustain what's already there and mm-hmm. the people that are already there. I mean, I always bring up the example of Tom's Shoes because, you know, when Tom's Shoes started, it was you buy a pair and they donate a pair mm-hmm. to someone in need in one of those countries. But what they eventually learned was that put out of business the local shoemaker because now everybody has free shoes.
Yeah.
So I really took that concept and I wanted to avoid that. I didn't want to go in like, I'm here to save y'all and help you because I'm African, they're African.
Yeah.
And they didn't need my saving. They mm-hmm. wanted to do business. And so I always had in my mind, if I want to help, I'm going to do business there. I want to mm-hmm. do business directly with them. Because they knew what they were talking about. They knew about these ingredients. They had been using them for generations. Their moms had used them. And so it was more so me coming on my knees, open to learn, mm-hmm. open to unlearn what I thought and to really listen and absorb and respectfully create things.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how I was coming into it. And at the same time, I realized that the bigger that we could do, the better they could be.
Yeah.
So it was more so like, how can we help, but in a sense of like, let's do trade, not aid is what I like to say.
Mm-hmm.
So let's work with them. And the more we work with them, the better they can do. So one of the cooperatives we work with, we helped them purchase a 10,000 gallon water tank so they can process more shea butter efficiently mm-hmm. and safely. And so again, that helps them increase mm-hmm. their operations. And so that's how we like to do things. Like, what can we do? So it's not so much we're giving you a fish.
Yeah.
We're like, adding to
creating a sustainable environment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it. And not so much like we're going to come in and just save it. Mm-hmm. I don't look at it like that. And they don't either because I would ask, what could we do? And they're like, do business with us. Yeah. That's what you could do.
Yeah. That reminds me of the conversation we had like last year about, you know, appropriation of ingredients and cultural appreciation versus appropriation. And so I would love to kind of tie that into this. And for you, like even going into your home country, like you still, there are things you said you don't show, cultural practices that you don't show, but you also are giving back to the communities at the same time. So can you talk a little bit about that and how you approach that and what you've seen that is kind of like troubling in terms of people going into Africa or other countries and taking ingredients?
Ooh, I think that's a very like hot topic.
Yeah.
And the way that I look at it is you have to be very careful, and it's important that things are acknowledged
mm-hmm.
and spoken about.
Yeah.
Because it happens in so many different ways.
Yeah, article got people fired up.
Yeah, it's like it with the trends, you know, with Black women, you know, we wear our nails a certain way, our makeup, and then it's like, oh, let's repackage it and make it like this.
Buzzy white celebrity.
Yeah, and now it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember seeing something that bothered me so much. I think it was a TikTok or something, and it was a non-Black person, and they had went and got braids, and she was like, making a video, I gotta take these out because I have a job interview tomorrow and I gotta look professional.
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So it's like that's our everyday.
Yeah.
So the way that I have to look at it is that we have to acknowledge what the sources of things are. Mm-hmm. You have to acknowledge, you have to verbalize it. You have to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, we can't just, I don't think it's okay for brands to find an ingredient and then repackage it into mm-hmm. something that's more, you know, palpable.
Yeah. Or say we discovered this,
you know, and here's our new body butter. It's not okay. Mm-hmm. So I think really acknowledging where things come from is important, because if you don't do that, you're essentially erasing parts of people's history, mm-hmm. Which is dangerous.
Yeah.
And I think especially with being an African inspired brand, a lot of our history was passed down orally. So it mm-hmm. wasn't written down. Mm-hmm. And so it's, if we're going to use an ingredient or, you know, a certain practice, we have to talk about it and we have to write it down. Because otherwise,
the history of it. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's how I look at it. There's certain things that we don't create mm-hmm. out of respect, or things that we do create, we want to make sure that we're using them correctly. We're talking about them correctly mm-hmm. because all of that matters. And these groups of people can be so fragile, mm-hmm. you know, with some of these practices becoming extinct. And so I think it's the brand's responsibility to make sure that whatever they're creating, they're doing it respectfully and to ask questions. Like if you don't know, ask someone who does. You can't just put it out there and think ignorance.
Perpetuate ignorance. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't do that. In mm-hmm. 2023, there's no excuse.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about go back to kind of brand building with you and like bringing 54 Thrones to life. So for you, as you were bringing things to life, working with the women in Africa and like creating products, what was the first time that you felt like there was a significant win for you, where it was like sales or retail partnership or community on social? Like what was one of those first moments where you're like, okay, this is going to be something big?
Ooh, I would say 2020. Mm-hmm. So mid-year 2020, and it was a bittersweet time because mm-hmm. I started the brand officially in 2016.
Yeah.
So 4 years, I didn't feel that until 4 years later, which is important because I think even myself, when I started, I literally thought, okay, like I started this brand on Monday.
It's going to take off tomorrow.
Friday, I'm going to be rolled like.
Yeah, rich.
Exactly. And that's not what happened. That was mm-hmm. so far from what happened. Like I started the brand and that's what I thought. And my first orders were like my cousin, my friend. Like,
Your circle.
And literally 3 weeks later, I started another business. And that's a whole nother story.
Oh my gosh.
But our first win would have been in 2020. And really, that was just during Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. you know, George Floyd. I live in Houston and I live down the street from where George Floyd grew up. Mm. And I remember my aunt and my two cousins and we went to his viewing of the body.
Mm.
You know, we went there and that was a very like the moment, just like we literally walked up to this huge casket of his. He was a very tall man, and just feeling that. And mm-hmm. then me going home and seeing our sales like skyrocketing.
Yeah.
So it was a bittersweet moment. It was mm-hmm. something that I've had that at that time I had to really like battle with, because it was like I was happy that we were getting sales, but
it was a tragedy.
The reason why it was a tragedy. And so I know I'm not alone in saying this, and mm-hmm. many Black owned brands, you know, began to see their sales skyrocket in 2020
mm-hmm.
Because society felt like they, you know, they wanted to patronize Black brands. They had mm-hmm. this, all of a sudden they had this duty.
Yeah.
But it also put 54 Thrones in front of our customers who were looking, didn't know what they were looking for us, and they found us. And so 2020 is when like we started to get more press, we started to get more traction. And that was like that was a win for us because we were self-funded, you know, we didn't have a lot of money to spend on marketing. And so for people to be organically finding us and to be organically in press, that mm-hmm. was like a huge win for us. Like that was the beginning for us.
And since then, you guys have been on like a crazy trajectory with Opportunity, Shark Tank, being on Oprah's list. Like I would first want to talk about Shark Tank. So we talked about it before for the story for Birdie, but let's recap like what that experience was like for you and like what Shark Tank meant in for your journey.
Shark Tank was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing experience. I applied.
Mm-hmm.
I went through the process, you know, to go on the show. And it's really one of those once in a lifetime experiences, like going through with it and, you know, getting in front of the judges and really trying to sell yourself and sell your brand. And so a lot of people ask me, like, were you nervous? You know, how did you feel? And I did not feel nervous.
And it showed. It showed. And, like, you came in that room, you're like, I'm about to give them everything.
That's how I felt. Yeah. I mean, and the best way that I can just try to, like, make someone understand is, like, if someone asks you to talk about the one thing you know the best, the one thing you have been eating, sleeping, breathing for 5 years, they ask you to talk about that in front of five people who have been waiting for you all day to come in. Your name is on their list. They're waiting for you and they're smiling at you, waiting for you to get to talk. And they know what you're here to talk about.
Yeah.
So I was ready. Like, that's exactly what it felt like walking into something. And then once you get going, once I started speaking and, you know, I knew my business, I knew my numbers, I was anticipating things that they were going to ask me.
Yeah.
I literally felt like I was just floating. Like, I was in that zone.
Just coasting through
the pitch. I was like, let's go. And it turned out well, and I felt good about it. I was excited to be on the show when it aired. So many people watched, you know, and it's just like, and it still re-airs. Mm-hmm. And it's a great feeling to know that you were able to have that experience.
I love watching you, Alicia, like all the Black founders. I was like, look at my girl on the Shark Tank this season. It was that was the reason why I wanted to write that story, because it was clear that I think as a result of 2020, Shark Tank was trying to diversify too. Yeah. So that was another one of the effects of that time period.
Absolutely. And there's the new season out. There's a lot of people that you probably know that are going to be showing up on there also.
Yes. And so I was also about to ask you about, like, lessons you've learned in this journey that you would pass on to other entrepreneurs. But I think there's a lesson in the Shark Tank story, if you're willing to talk about it as well. Like, you passed on the deal because it wasn't a fit for you. So can you talk about that? Because I think that would also be a valuable piece of advice for founders, entrepreneurs, on just like knowing what's right for your business and your journey.
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, especially when you're going to take on investors, I've heard this so many times and it's so true, but it's like a marriage, like you're getting married and it's much easier to get married than to get divorced. So I really, you know, I don't want to give away what happened on the show. You got to watch.
Yes.
But I had a great experience even after the show. Yeah. But ultimately, I thought about my business and what my business needed and where I saw my business going. And I decided that it wasn't the best fit for me. There are lots of founders and brands that do go through with their Shark Tank deals. Some do not. But I think ultimately, you have to really dig deep and talk to your investors and really figure out where they see the brand and where you see the brand. And does that align? Because once they're on and you're together, and it's not just you calling the shots anymore. It's our vision. It's our business, you know? And so I think taking all those things into account is really important if you're going on Shark Tank or just talking to angel investors or VCs or private equity, but really, you know, taking your time also to make a decision before you do sign on that dotted line. So
yeah, I think that's so important because a lot of people don't know what happens to brands after Shark Tanks. We just see the deal and then it cuts and you walk out those doors and we don't know, like, did they go through with it? How's the brand doing? So I think it's important to share, like, what is the aftermath. Yes. So what are some other lessons that you've learned, whether it be professionally or personally, over this journey of building 54 Thrones?
I learned so many lessons.
Yes, there's so many things, I'm
and
sure.
And I'm like, I'll name a few, but one for sure is, like, when you're starting your business, you have an urge to want to get advice from your friends and your family, and I wouldn't recommend that because a lot of times you're asking your parents who've never been an entrepreneur. You know, they only can give you so much advice, and if someone has not been in your shoes and now you're asking them for advice, a lot of times they can talk you out of something that could have been a great opportunity. And I also would never ask for advice for someone who's not where you want to be.
I feel like I just saw that tweeted the other day. because it's a word. Like, it's so true, because we ask everybody, random people, and it's like,
what
are they offering?
They're like, not. Yeah. And a lot of times, like, your family and friends are not your target audience.
Yeah.
And when they buy from you, it's kind of like, skewing your analytics because they're buying is because they like you and they love you and they want to support you. They're not buying because it's an actual product that they're that interested in. And so early on, I was not looking for support from my friends or family in terms of purchasing my product. They did and they still do. And so now I'm like, maybe they actually like it.
Yeah. And it's not just me.
It's not just me. But I would say that, you know, as part of the first piece of advice. And then I also would say that people should know that most entrepreneurs, like the people that you see in the magazines and on the podcast, and no one knows what they're doing. It just looks like that.
Yeah.
Like we're just,
it's a highlight reel.
It's a highlight reel. We're solving problems. All this is solving problems all day long. We're solving problems. And so a lot of times we see the shiny websites and the packaging and we're like, oh my gosh, they got it so much together.
Yeah.
And most times they don't. We don't. We're just solving problems. And so I think if you want to become an entrepreneur, it's important to learn to solve problems and not get so tied up with your feelings and your emotions. You have to be able to look at things objectively and analytically, because that's all that we're doing. We're solving problems. And when you have a team, you're trying to get people to help you get the desired result. So we're managing people. We're managing personalities all day long. Like there's a lot of like, you get to do fun stuff eventually.
Yeah.
But a lot of
nitty gritty things that go into it.
A lot of nitty gritty things. And I think sometimes, you know, when you're starting something, you see other people's businesses and brands and you're like, oh my gosh. And a lot of times it's like one person who just didn't give up. And it just looks like that. It just looks like that. But they're not there yet. They're still working and grinding. And you know what I mean? So don't get discouraged and like talk yourself out of it because, you know, you think, oh, that's so far off, you know, because a lot of times it's not. They just got a good website and they paid for some good pictures. And that's what it looks like. And so that's one, the second piece of advice. And the third piece of advice and final piece of advice is I always hear people say, well, I want to start this, but the market's saturated. You know, I want to start a beauty brand. I want to start a fashion label. I want to do this, but there's already so many. There's too many this, there's too many that. And what I would say is I would be more scared to start a business if no one else was already in it. And I say that because if you do, like, for instance, beauty or skincare, hair care, whatever, just know that all the other brands that are doing it, they have already validated your market. They validated the idea. So you already know it works versus if you're trying to do something that hasn't been done. That's very risky.
Yeah. You're trying to prove something.
You're trying to prove something that hasn't been proven. So I would not get discouraged. There's tons of makeup brands, successful makeup brands.
Yeah, I get pitches every day.
You get pitches every day.
And people are finding ways to differentiate themselves.
There's tons of Black-owned brands. There's tons of body care brands. There's tons. So there's, and there's space.
Yeah.
I just walked into Sephora and saw a million people at every single stall. Yeah. Like there's space. So don't talk yourself out of something because someone's already doing it. And when you start to think like that, just think about where did you eat throughout the whole month? You ate at least a dozen different places. So I would, that's what, like, the main thing I hear is like the market's saturated. You know, there's not enough space. There is enough space. Just make sure that you're solving an important enough problem. It doesn't have to be a huge problem. You could solve a problem that affects a small amount of people, but those people are extremely passionate about you solving that problem.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you can find out a way to serve them to where they are telling their friends every second they get and they're tweeting and they're, and they're, that's important enough. And that proves your concept enough to go through with it. So I would not get, you know, discouraged when you think of market saturation or there's this or that, like not at all.
I definitely agree. I think of, like, we were just talking about the Tracee Ellis Ross blow dryer. And like she was talking today about, like, there was a need to innovate blow dryers. Blow dryers have existed forever, but like she found a way to like create something new. So there's always, I think, room for like little ways to like tweak and create something new. And
there
I
can't wait to try the blow dryer.
I know. I need it in my hands now because I'm like, now I want to like blow up my hair, get some braids. Like, oh my gosh.
Just use it.
Yeah, just use it for whatever reason. Well, the next thing I want to talk about is what's next in the pipeline for the brand. So like Sephora launch obviously is top of mind and the most like exciting thing happening for the brand. But are there any new products or anything? Look, tell me.
So the Sephora launch, like we've been looking forward to this for a very long time, like launching in stores. We were sold online, but last Friday we launched in stores in the US and Canada. Mm-hmm. So we're still like basking, you know, in that.
And you deserve
soaking
to.
It all in. We're soaking it all in still. But we definitely have new products coming this year, which I'm so excited for too. Because we have not had new products like in 2 years. Mm. And so people are like, what's coming up?
Next? Right. Yeah.
So we've just been working and really trying not to rush and just put something out there. Yeah. Because for us, you know, the ingredient story, you know, and the ritual that we're sharing or introducing is central.
Yeah.
And so just making sure that we're doing that in a thoughtful way and making sure that we're creating the best experience for the end user, because I read the DMs, I see the emails, I see the good ones and the bad ones. Mm-hmm. And we really want to make sure that the product is ready and that it's going to be, you know, embraced by who's our target. And so we do have new products coming this year. And I can't wait for everyone to try them. Like, that's what I'm really looking forward to.
I can't wait either. Cause you know, I'm be like yelling about it on Birdie's screen, be like, I'm keeping this in my bag too.
You know, we have a package coming your way.
Yes, I can't wait. So I want to tie it back into like your own beauty routine. You talked about you being sent tubs of shea butter from your aunt back when you were younger. Yeah. But were you also into makeup, skincare growing up? Like, were you that beauty girl?
Growing up, I was not into makeup. But I do remember my first time going to a Sephora store. It was the year I was about to graduate college, and my friend's mom gave me and my two best friends $50 gift cards to go to Sephora. And I had never been to Sephora. And so we went, and I remember what I bought, like, and I was 18. But before then, I wasn't into makeup. I had a pretty simple kind of like typical teenage skincare routine. I think at one point I used Proactive. Like, it was very like generic skincare routine. But I love being moisturized.
Body care was always like
I love, of course, shea butter. I grew up using that. Still use it. Cocoa butter, like all of those things. I love slathering my body. Yeah. Like, I want you to see the glow. That's the kind of person I am. So I was always into, like, you know, the shea butters, the cocoa butters. Today, of course, I use 54 Thrones products, but I'm definitely a skincare person. Makeup, kind of. I do the same look.
Me too. I'm like, I got blush, the same foundation.
I don't know how to do eye makeup yet. I just do the same face. But as far as skincare, definitely love. There's some brands that I love also.
Please shout them out. I want another routine.
I use 54 Thrones. I am a black soap girl. I also like topicals. I love their faded. I love them. Glow Recipe.
Yes, you got to try topicals. New eye mask. Have you tried those?
I haven't, but I've been seeing them on Instagram.
Yeah, they're so good. The they're hydrogen, cute. Yeah. And they work really well.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to Sephora. I have to pick those up because I've been seeing them.
I ran out, but I'm like, I'm going to buy them. Yeah.
So I love topicals. I also love Glow Recipe. I love Glow Recipe's watermelon toner. Like, that is the best toner. I love their toner. I love the watermelon mask too. I love the mist. Like, I'm a Glow Recipe fan also. Who else do I love? I like, right now I like Laneige's moisturizer gel and this new water drop or something moisturizer that I like. Skincare, body care,
54 Thrones.
Makeup, I've just bought 2 Ame Cole's lip glosses.
Now they're in Sephora too.
So I like her products as well. Pat McGrath. Who else do I use?
That's a good lineup.
That's what I use now. So, but I've always been into, like, since I was 18, obsessed with like going to Sephora and spending all my money.
Me too. Yeah. Like, I remember for my senior pictures, I went to Sephora to get my makeup done there. Like, so ever since high school, I've been like a Sephora girl.
Same.
And then I went to Ulta for my high school graduation pictures. So I'm just like, I am at both the stores.
Anyway, like, I go there, like, going to lunch.
Yes.
Like, Sephora. That's what we do. It's like, it's an activity.
It for real is. I could spend hours in there swatching things. Same. But I also want to talk about self-care for you. I know, like, body care, skincare is part of that. But for you, like, you talk about, you know, managing people and, like, managing a business. Like, that takes so much out of you. And, like, all this energy. And like, so for you, what does self-care look like? How do you manage your mental health and just make sure that you're okay before tackling everything?
I think my first thing was acknowledging that there's seasons where I'm not gonna have balance. Mm-hmm. And that's okay with me. That's okay with me, Christina. And I acknowledge that, because right now I'm in a season of sewing right now, right? Mm-hmm. So I understand that I might not get 9 hours of sleep every night, and that's okay for me right now, but I still have to make sure that I'm managing myself and I'm taking care of myself. And so we've been talking a lot about this concept of soft life and soft mm-hmm. living, and I've been embracing that. Yeah. I've been embracing that outside of work, but also making space for that, you know, within my regular day. And mm-hmm. I think that when we think of self-care, maybe soft life, I think it's easy for us to kind of like commoditize that and think that has to be associated with, you know, spending $300 and getting in the spa and making sure you have the latest this. And it actually doesn't. Mm-hmm. I think just being gentler with yourself is a start. And mm-hmm. when I say gentler, I mean forgiving yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like forgiving yourself and not being so hard on yourself when you forget something at home, when you got to drive. Like the little thing, you can start with the little things. Mm-hmm. Because when you start with the little things, when the big things happen, it's easier to be softer and kinder to yourself.
Yeah.
Because I think that with today, with social media and just everything, everyone's so hard on themselves and we're comparing ourselves and we want this and we want to look like this. So I think just soft can also be interpreted with like being softer and more forgiving mm-hmm. with yourself. Like, it doesn't have to be tied to it, to the things.
Yeah.
Right. Because there's always going to be new things and bigger things and better things and more expensive things. Mm-hmm. And so I've been embracing like being softer with myself, being more patient with myself. Yeah. Like if I fall asleep in the middle of doing something in my bed on my computer, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be there in the morning. Mm-hmm. Right. So really embracing like the softness. And then also, my cousin had said this to me today, keep something soft and your boundaries. What was it? Keep your heart soft mm-hmm. and your boundaries strong.
Okay. I love that.
So do I. She saw that on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Keep your heart soft and your boundaries strong. So I mm-hmm. think another part of self-care, you know, is having those boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. Not being afraid to say no to something.
Yeah.
Not being afraid to say yes to something new that you might want to, you know, want to try. So I think mm-hmm. boundaries, and then also like embracing the soft life and the softness is okay. And then I take my pleasures seriously. Mm-hmm. The things I like them, and I'm going to do them and I'm going to make them happen. And so I think that's another like thing that I've done to like maintain my mental health and how I feel physically mm-hmm. all around.
Yeah, it's so important. And as you were talking about soft life, it made me think of something that I've been like, I said I didn't really make resolutions, but one of the things was like, I want to move through my days with ease. It's like, mm-hmm. and so for me, that means like, how can I prepare so the day is easier for me and I'm not stressed about X, Y, and Z? Or like, how can I like go to my Pilates class and make that like find time for wellness? And like, I'm just trying to find ways to like develop joy and like wellness and prioritize myself, because I think 2022 was like crazy. Girl. Like I just felt like I wasn't taking care of myself. And so even earlier today I was talking with a coworker of like, we need to take care of ourselves. We need to like eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like
simple things, concepts.
But like they escape us when we're living life and like doing work. So it's just like, I think for me, like especially now that I'm in January, I'm trying to like establish those routines and like practice that soft life and like take care of myself, because it's so important.
And it's crazy that like for a lot of us who, you know, workaholics, soft life is like, make sure you eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
Like that's where we're starting
from. And that's normal, but like, we're like, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen most of the time. Oh my gosh. Well, I also, before we go, I always like to do a beauty speed round with each guest. So it's a couple questions and you just have to fill in the blank, like rapid fire style. So the first one is, I feel most beautiful when?
Ooh, on the beach with no makeup.
Ooh, we love it. Bare face, sunny, sand, love
sunscreen
it.
And body oil.
Yes. The beauty product I use every day is, I think I know this
you
one.
Already know. The 54th Rose African Beauty Butter.
Yes, go buy it at Sephora. The next one is, the last beauty product I bought was, I think you answered this one.
Ami Cole lip gloss.
Yes, that's so good. I keep one of those with me as well.
I love it.
My beauty crush is anyone with amazing skin, hair, nails, makeup. Ooh. That you follow, celeb, influencer.
Oh man, there's so many. Okay, There's a couple people that I love. Of course, I'm from Houston, Beyonce.
Yes.
Rihanna, I love her unapologetic style also.
Yes, I'm ready for Super Bowl. I know. What she's going to bring. I don't know what song she's going to do.
Definitely Beyonce and Rihanna. You can't go wrong.
Yes. My favorite song to get ready to is...
anything Afro beats right now.
Yes. And the last one is, I love being a Black woman because...
because of everything. Like, when I'm like walking down the street and we just give each other that look, like...
We get it.
I find myself saying that so many times. Like, I love being a Black woman.
Yeah.
Like, we got all of this.
Yeah. All of it. I wouldn't want to be anything else.
Me neither.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm so happy we're able to meet in person, do this in person. Because we've been chatting for like two stories we worked on together over Zoom. And I'm like, we need to get off Zoom and come in.
2 years.
Yes. Well, shout out where everyone can keep up with you and the brand and just everything.
54 Thrones on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, all of that. And my Instagram is Funke, F-U-N-K-E _ Tegbe, T-E-G-B-E. Follow us. We've got new products, new things, new experiences coming in 2023. I cannot wait.
Me either. Thank you. Thank you. This podcast was produced by B.A. Kasanga. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you like what you heard, head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts to catch up on all episodes of The Hue Report. You can also stay connected with our growing Black beauty community by following us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at The Hue Report.